Good day, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To find out more about our upcoming shows or access to our more than 1,800 podcast episodes, visit our website at www.bikeradio.me. Today, my special guest is Dr. Tony Nader, author of The Power of Caring, Who Cares, Why It Matters, and How Conscious Caring Creates a Fulfilling and Connected Life. In The Power of Caring, renowned Vedic astrologer and neuroscientist Dr. Tony Nader explores the nature of caring itself, what shapes it, why it so often leads to overwhelm or withdrawal, and how it can become a source of clarity rather than confusion. Drawing on neuroscience, psychology, philosophy, and decades of experience with transcendental meditation, Dr. Nader reveals a deep perspective. Caring is not just a personal act. It reflects a fundamental connection we share with others and with life itself. When we understood this way, caring becomes not only a burden, but a powerful source of purpose, resilience, and fulfillment. Dr. Tony Nader is a medical doctor trained at Harvard University in Massachusetts Institute of Technology, a PhD in brain and cognitive sciences. He is a globally recognized expert in the science of consciousness and human development, and he is the successor to Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and head of Transcendental Meditation Organizations globally, and president of Maharishi International University. Dr. Nader is expanding the understanding of the relationship between consciousness and physiology and the possibility of developing full human potential. For more information, you can visit his website, which is drtonynader.com, and that's drtonynader, N-A-D-E-R.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Nader to the show. Good day, sir.
Wonderful, Robert. Thank you for having me. You can also call me Tony, whatever you like.
Okay.
Wonderful to be on your great show, which brings inspiration and upliftment to so many people.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I will call you Tony. So, Tony, what inspired you to write this particular book?
Robert, I spent decades, you know, watching people care in ways that are generally imperfect, including, I should say, at the beginning, myself. And I wanted to offer something that might help. So, you know, as a doctor myself and being with doctors, I have watched doctors burn out. I have watched parents become exhausted by love, even. I have watched activists become bitter because the world did not change as fast as they cared about, wanted it to change. I have also watched people withdraw from caring altogether into indifference or cynicism. Because caring can hurt or has hurt them too much. And I have watched in many different cultures and contexts, the rarer actually human beings who have found a way to care in a sustainable way. And they are able to give decade after decade without really depleting. So the difference between those two groups, I came to find or to understand, was not how much they cared, it was what they were caring from what level they were caring. The exhausted ones cared generally from anxiety, from urgency, from the constant pressure to fix everything. The sustainable ones cared from a settled inner ground that was being constantly replenished. So the distinction is the heart of the book. And I wanted to put it down clearly, drawing on what I have learned from medicine, neuroscience, as you said, also philosophy, understanding of consciousness, the worldview, and from ancient traditions, Vedic tradition, from Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who transcendental meditation and the different aspects that I've learned about human decision, because caring means it's something you want to do, and it has a spectrum. You know, we care to breathe, we care to eat, we care to grow, we care to love, we care to be loved, we care about money, we care about life, and sometimes we are doing it in a way that is with some kinds of attachment or some kinds of situations that are not allowing us to get fulfillment from every action that we do. Because whatever we do is something we, in a way, care to do. That's how we make a decision to open a business, to get, you know, family mm-hmm. or friends, etc. So there are so many aspects to caring, and caring on a conscious level, that I thought to write a book not to ask people to care more or less, but to learn how to care better and where to direct their care under a variety of multitudes of different circumstances and situations.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you expanded or talked about the realm or the variety and the expanse that caring is demonstrated in our life every day.
Yes, yes, it covers a large area of interest, a large area of life. You know, it goes through caring in divorce, caring in relationships, caring in love, caring when there is loss. Actually, you know, conscious caring is more like whatever, how to decide to do something and to do it correctly.
Okay. Now the title of the book is The Power of Caring. So I was curious as to why you chose to frame caring as either being or having power.
Yeah, the term power, you know, the word power is often used to mean like control over others, political power, economic power, coercive power. That is one meaning, and I see it as a narrow meaning. The older, original, and deeper meaning of the word is closer to capacity or the strength or force. So like the power of an engine, the power of a current, the power of an idea to change a life. So caring in that older sense is one of the most genuine powers a human being can exercise. It changes things. A child who is cared for develops differently from one who is not. A patient who feels cared for heals differently from one who does not. A community held together by mutual caring withstands what an isolated community cannot withstand. So these are not soft effects. You know, they are measurable, observable, and decisive. So when I titled the book The Power of Caring, I was deliberately reclaiming the word in a sense. Caring has not often been treated as the soft alternative to power, as kindness without teeth, as, you know, a feeling without consequence. Mm-hmm. And that framing is wrong. Caring done consciously, then that's important. I emphasize the word consciously here, and sustained over time, is one of the most powerful forces in human life. It builds people, it builds relationships, it builds institutions, it builds civilizations. So to frame caring as power is to insist that we take it seriously, not as a secondary virtue, but as a central operating principle of what conscious life is here to do. And actually, as you probably know or read that from the book, that it's coming from within. It's a natural aspect of the inner life. That's why maybe in your question you said caring as being and as a personal being, that then gives the power to the individual to live a life of fulfillment.
Now, what you mentioned capacity, and it seems that some people have an ability, a natural ability, maybe strong ability for caring, you know, in all aspects, and some people have not so good, have maybe a challenge in that area. So what is your view on, I would think, maybe the human capacity for caring, and what do you think maybe are some of the reasons for the difference in ability?
Yeah, if we look at the difference in ability, there are, you know, life comes with different circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
We are born with certain, you know, genetic abilities on all levels. We are able to act in different ways based on the environment we have grown in. But no matter what, that ability to care is something very deep within us. It's something very profound because caring is wired within us all. And sometimes the stress and the tensions and the upbringing and whatever circumstance can hide that. So it doesn't mean it's not there and it cannot be unfolded and opened up. So if we go, for example, to those who come to caring easily, and usually we can say they share three things. Maybe they were cared for early in life, often by people who themselves knew how to care without losing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So their nervous systems were taught in those early years that closeness is safe. And they have somewhere along the way internalized a sense of inner abundance, the feeling that giving does not deplete the self, because the self is connected to something larger. On the other hand, and that's not the only reason, of course, those
mm-hmm.
who struggle with caring tend to carry the opposite. They may have been cared for, maybe inconsistently or harmfully. The nervous system learned early that closeness is dangerous. So they often operate from a sense of inner scarcity, the feeling that giving anything away leaves them with less.
Mm-hmm.
None of this is a moral failing, that's very important to know. It is the natural consequence of conditions that did not teach them otherwise. However, it is not that they cannot learn how to care. So what the book is offering is how to reverse any negativity and how to enhance all possibilities. And that's the good news. And I would say for this, there are three things that help. First, healing, meaning working with the wounds that taught you closeness was unsafe. A good therapist, a trusted community time. This is the slow fundamental work, but there is technology, a deeper technology that allows to remove the stresses and strains, the imprints, the scars that were there, can actually really be removed. And that's where, in my experience, transcendental meditation plays an amazing role, because we have seen even, you know, people who are underserved, even criminals, even, you know, people who are, you know, not adapted to society properly, we have seen them transform and change their behavior, their health, their well-being, their psychology. And then caring becomes a natural process, not something forced. So in the book, I emphasize also the importance of going back into the self, resting deeply, transcending. And that would be the second most important aspect. Another aspect we can say is, make sure you practice things in small doses. So care for one person well today, just one person well, in a small way. Then tomorrow. And the capacity expands the way a muscle actually expands, through gradual, consistent use with adequate recovery between sessions. And remember the importance of caring for yourself as the basis of caring for others. If we start caring for others and ourself is not well established in the self, then we are likely to fail because the physiology is not able to handle it. So, and again, it's not a moral failing, it's not an obligation, it's stepwise recovering, strengthening oneself, and then the caring comes more and more naturally, and in small steps is better.
Well, you know, first of all, I'm, you know, happy that you emphasize that it's not a moral failing, that one's ability to care may be lacking, but in the sense that their life experiences or circumstances may have contributed to
the incapacity to properly care.
So, and, you know, so I'm really happy to hear that. So for anyone listening, don't do the guilt, you know, at all. And now the idea of, you know, healing as one of the steps to increase one's ability. Now, transcendental meditation, I mentioned it in the introduction, how important that is to you. And you've mentioned that is a valuable tool in it. So for people who may not have any idea what transcendental meditation is, can you maybe give us just a little bit of a brief overview? So, there may be some people, younger people, who have not heard of it, or anyone.
Yes, absolutely. Transcendental meditation is a technique that comes from very ancient time. It's part of the yogic tradition, yoga and meditation, comes from India, but it's a technique that is universal. And it's very, very simple and very natural. These are two important things. So it is not something forced. It's not something that is, difficult concentration, or you have to stop the mind or calm the mind, etc. And many people will tell you, I cannot do that, it's not for me. So that's not transcendental meditation. Transcendental meditation, to transcend means to go beyond the surface value of the mind. So if we imagine the mind as an ocean, which is active on its surface with the waves, and as you go deeper, deeper, and deeper in one's own mind, like the ocean, there is more quietness, more settled levels. And all the power of the ocean to create waves on the surface comes from the depths of the ocean. Because on the surface level of a pond, you can only create ripples. And as the ocean gets deeper, as the waves can be higher. So the waves are important for activity and power on the outside and energy, but they have to draw from the inner depths of the mind, which we have now said is like the ocean. And that inner depth is the source of thought, the source of creativity, the source of intelligence. So when we want to do something, we want to care, we want to achieve something, we want to live our life in a way or another, this activity comes from the thought process. We think first, and then we act. Now, where does the thought come from? It comes from deep within the inner intelligence that we have, which is a quiet field that goes beyond the surface conscious level or even the subconscious or unconscious level, goes deeply to a process of the human nervous system, the human brain, the human consciousness, selecting, adapting, thinking, calculating, projecting, and then a feeling comes, a thought comes. So usually we only know the thought on the surface level. Transcending is to go beyond. So we go beyond the surface level, and you learn, which you learn in only actually three days or four days even, at a rate of 1.5 hours per day. And you learn how to let the mind dive, guided by its own nature, towards its inner depth, because the mind is always looking for more happiness, more fulfillment, more beauty, more of everything, more charm. And it's usually looking for that on the outside, looking towards the outside. I want this to see, I want this to hear, I want this to achieve, I want this to have. But in this technique, we turn the mind to the inner value, which is more than all the surface value. So we can imagine that within us there is an infinite reservoir of creativity and intelligence, and that reservoir is present within us. And so when the mind learns how to turn within without forcing, guided by its own nature, it dives deep within and it gets settled, and that settling process removes the stress and the strain and the fatigue, gives energy and, you know, better health and also better behavior, and even influences the environment. So transcendental meditation is a technique. It's something one learns in easy steps, and then one can practice by themselves on their own, morning, sitting comfortably in a chair. There is no need to change habits or anything. And then you get to this deep creativity, deep intelligence, and the removal of stress on the outside.
Okay, well, thank you for that. That, I think, gives us and listeners a good idea of what transcendental meditation is, and people can certainly explore further. And I would think that going through that process is one of the key elements to help people avoid fatigue and burnout.
Correct. Exactly. And, you know, it's easy to find a teacher. You go to tm.org, or as you mentioned at the beginning, it also, if you go to my website, drtoninader.com, you can find the link to learn transcendental meditation.
Great. That's perfect. Now, part of caring in all the parts of life, it seems that at times boundaries seem to pop up, or either a need for boundaries, or sometimes there are so many boundaries set that it can lead to maybe frustration or maybe even resentment or controlling even in some cases. So can you talk a little bit about the importance of boundaries when it comes to caring?
Yes, you know, for the giver, the one who is giving the caring, the first thing to understand is that boundaries are not walls. They are not refusals to love. They are the discernment about what is yours to give and what is not. So there is a discernment here that is needed. That's why we call it conscious caring. So a boundary well placed is what allows you to keep loving for the long term. Without it, the love either becomes resentment or it becomes control, neither of which is truly love. So, for example, a few practical considerations for the giver, the one who gives the care. Know your limits before you reach them. Communicate them kindly but clearly. Do not punish the other person for the limit you have set. And importantly, be willing to revisit the boundary as circumstances change. So boundaries are living things, not rigid lines. They can be reshaped, reconsidered, readjusted, and they are not walls. So that is from the giver's side, in the psychology, in the mind, and the feeling of the giver's side. For the receiver, there is a different but equally important practice. Receiving care well is also a skill. The receiver has to be honest about what they actually need, rather than testing the giver, for example. The receiver has to avoid exploiting the giver's love by asking for more than is reasonable. The receiver has to do their own inner work so that the caregiver is not the only ground beneath their feet. I use this in the book, this expression. So the deepest thing about boundaries is that they protect the relationship itself, not just the giver, and a relationship in which one person carries everything and the other carries nothing is not actually a relationship of love. It is a relationship of dependence, dressed in love's language. So real love between two adults is mutual. And boundaries make that mutuality possible.
Yeah, and thank you. And those are really good ideas when it comes to communicating about boundaries. First of all, when you mentioned, that first of all, they aren't walls, and I think just from my experience, I've been a caregiver for a couple times in recent years for a couple periods of time, and then also talked to some of my friends and podcast listeners about it, that quite often they're viewed as walls. I mean, and I think maybe part of it is in the communication, which you said it was number two, to communicate what those are. Sometimes the communication is maybe the boundary is presented as this, that it is a wall, right? And not something that could even shift in the future when, in fact, that it could.
Yes, the term boundary seems to be strong in that sense. That's why, we are defining it not a wall, but like there is a capacity that we have. And if that capacity is bypassed, is not considered, is not taken into consideration, then the whole thing falls apart. And then the ability to care changes and it becomes resentment and the relationship falls apart. Yeah. So it's important to understand both from the giver and the receiver that, what can I do, what can you do, under what circumstance, etc.
Yeah, that's good. Now, in your book, you talk about or you offer practical reset tools. So could you explain to us what a reset tool is and when might it be necessary?
Yeah, of course. In every chapter, there is a reset tool. We call it quick reset. And some of them are just simply like we have explained, we have said the reset tool, are you the giver? Are you the receiver? Think about this, plan this, consider that. So the reset tools are really small, deliberate practices that return you to the inner ground when you have drifted away from it, really. So they are not crisis tools. They are not tools for just extreme circumstances. They are maintenance tools also. So they can be also applied in crisis because there is a whole chapter about how to care in crisis and how to deal with crisis situations. When are they necessary? Whenever you notice the signs that you have drifted, and the signs are usually clear once you know to look for them. For example, even physical aspect, tightness in the body, a short fuse, resentment toward people you love, the sense of running, of urgency, of being one step behind, difficulty sleeping, a vague feeling that something is off without being able to name that. So the first example, for example, is the breath pause, which I give in the book. So when you notice that drift, stop wherever you are. Three slow breaths, each one fully completed. Eyes closed even if possible. Nothing more. This takes 30 seconds and resets the nervous system more than actually people expect. A second example is the morning silence, the meditation. If you practice transcendental meditation, this is a tool, a reset tool, because, you know, the brain works like a computer with many processors. And if you have too many softwares running on the computer, it suddenly becomes slow and sluggish and doesn't become effective. So that is a reset, you know, you stop the computer and you reset it. And if you don't practice even transcendental meditation until you start learning it, you can do even 5 minutes sitting in a chair, even same chair, same time, you know, no input necessary. And this will be a very preventive kind of preparatory value. Another example, the third example can be, you know, when something larger has accumulated, then maybe a half hour walk without your phone, outside ideally, in nature, not even just with the intention, oh, I'm doing it for exercise, just to move the body and let the mind reset, enjoy it, so no, not like a forced thing I have to do. So for example, another aspect we can see in the book is, for example, when relationships have become strained, there, you know, I call it the honest pause, a brief deliberate stop to ask with someone you trust, am I caring from the right place right now, or have I drifted into anxiety? So the naming itself often resets the situation. So the principle behind all of this is the same. Awareness restores choice. The reset tools are simply small, reliable ways of producing awareness on demand.
Okay. Wow. And now with the idea of choice, what can one do to not only become more conscious of our choices, but also make more meaningful kind of contribution types of choices?
Yes, exactly. You know, and more conscious is part of making it meaningful, because suppose you go to the, you want to make a decision to invest in the stock market, but you want to choose where to invest. There is one awareness. You look at one aspect. Let's say the stock, this particular stock is going up and up. Oh, great. You say up and up. Great. Let me put my decision there because I've seen this. This is what I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. Now, somebody else who is broader awareness, broader consciousness, will not look only at the stock is going up. One will look at the trend, what has been doing, what is the company's worth, who are its managers, or who is running it, are they making right decisions, what is the demand of the market for such a product or such a stock or such activity of that company. Do they have competitors? Have they been stable? You look at their sheets or work or profit and loss. Well, this might be a simple example, but it just describes that consciousness is awareness of more things, expanding one's awareness. So when you expand your awareness, then your decisions are more meaningful. And this is truly basically almost the whole answer. And it is much more powerful than it sounds. You know, we tend to wait for meaningful contributions to arrive as large gestures. the major donation, the heroic act, the life-changing project. Those are moments when they come, they are wonderful, but they are rare. Most of life is not made up of them. Most of life is made up of the small choices. What you say to your child as they leave for school, how you treat the person who serves your coffee, whether you pick up the phone for a friend going through something, you know, whether you let the difficult colleague have the last word or escalate the conflict, you know, whether you walk past the trash in the park or pick it up, you know, this is, you know, examples, these are examples. None of these choices is by itself world-changing, but they accumulate over a year, 10,000 of them through so many thousands and millions of people, over a decade, 100,000, over a lifetime more. We shape life, and the shape of a life is the sum of those choices. So the transformation happens when those choices are made consciously rather than reflexly, automatically. So when you pause briefly before each one and ask, what would caring look like here? The pause changes everything. The choice that follows is your contribution. You're not reflexly acting just as a knee-jerk based on stress or fear or circumstance. You are the master of your decision. You have broad comprehension. And you have understanding, and that's why we have knowledge and we have books, and that's why the Power of Caring book is there to help guide in this proper directions and make really meaningful contributions.
Yeah. Well, it, I guess, empowering in a way to recognize that it's those everyday decisions and choices that we make and the resulting decisions that even though it may appear to be insignificant when taken together with all of one's life choices as well as those around us, then it becomes a much larger guiding force.
Exactly. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. So now, what do you hope that readers will take away from reading The Power of Caring?
I can say, you know, there are many things, of course, but overall, three things, let's say, mostly to summarize and be kind of brief in a sense. The first is the recognition that there is something already in them that is by its nature caring and loving. And that is really important through the book. It's explained about how physiologically, philosophically, spiritually we are wired to care. And it is not something, therefore, they have to manufacture or to earn. It's not a moral attitude they have to talk themselves into, not an obligation, not a performance. And the work is really happening from the inside. It's an inner home, a settled ground. You can call it consciousness, you can call it the self, you can call it whatever one's tradition names it. The work is not to create it. The work is to come back to it daily through silence, through honesty, through whatever practice returns you to yourself. That homecoming is the foundation of everything else. So that's a general kind of spiritual, if you like, philosophical perspective to understand first that it is there in you and you can allow it to unfold. The second, I would say, is the practical discernment to know what is theirs to do and what is not. So, you know, much of our exhaustion comes from carrying what was never ours to carry, while neglecting the things that genuinely are. So the daily question, what is mine to do today? What is not? That question is one of the most protective practices a caring person can adopt. It is not selfishness. That's very important, and inside, I insist about this in the book. It is precision. It is making sure the energy you have goes where it can actually do good and do the best.
Mm-hmm.
And the last point is also a little bit of expanded spiritual or philosophical, but it's very, very much true, that they will get from the book a quiet trust. The trust that the love you give is not wasted, even when the outcome does not always appear immediately. Trust that something larger than you is holding the accounting that you cannot see. Trust does not come easily, especially in a noisy, skeptical culture.
Mm-hmm.
But when it begins to come, even in glimpses, it changes everything. You stop loving in order to receive love back. You start loving because the loving itself is the point, and that is the freedom. So there is a liberating value, a great liberating, balancing value that I hope every reader will get from the book.
That's wonderful. The freedom, wired to care. I mean, I think a lot of people are going to be comforted by recognizing that, and it's a matter of unfolding that. And then the practical discernment and quiet trust are really important features. So, well, Dr. Nader, it has really been a pleasure to speak with you about your book. Now, I understand your book is to be released on July 28th. Is that correct?
Yes, in July it will be released, but we have pre-orders and would love to have those who are interested to start ordering the book if they like. We offer webinars and seminars and, you know, different kinds of things for those who like to join us in this journey of caring and making life more fulfilling and more connected.
Yeah, they have those bonus features for buying early, or certainly people should check them out and take advantage of that. So again, sir, I really want to thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Robert. You're amazing. Thank you for all you're doing.
Very welcome. Thank you. Again, everyone, today my special guest is Dr. Tony Nader, author of the book, The Power of Caring, Who Cares? Why It Matters, and How Conscious Caring Creates a Fulfilling and Connected Life. And again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is drtonynader.com, and that's drtonynader.com. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. And remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.